listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 232 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where today we will be talking about everything you need to consider before you choose, select, figure out what your artist or band name will be. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good. You know, on our last episode, we were talking a lot about my live streaming setup and how I've been going live twice a week and doing concerts. And you mentioned something kind of humorously about when you're going live and you're playing a concert and no one's watching except your mom.
Yes.
Well, that happened to me today. So not only was she the only one watching after, you know, 30 seconds or a minute or whatever, but after I had done this whole podcast episode with you about all the tech stuff and the setup, I had no audio going out into the world. So I finished a song. I think I'm rocking. And then I look and my mom's the one person watching and she's left a comment. No sound, or like no one can hear you or something like that. Like, oh, damn it. So,
you know, it could have been her just there going, yay, Chris. Keep going, Chris.
That's true. You're so great. At least I know she was trying to listen.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I guess also that might explain why she was the only one watching, because everyone else tuned in was like, what is this joker doing?
See, now you have a reason, an excuse for why no one was there, because they couldn't hear anything, so they left. So
they left, right. Instead of being helpful and saying, dude, audio problems.
Your mom was the one polite one that stuck around. She's like, I probably should tell him, but...
Yeah, and then silly me, you know, we were also talking about how you can either kind of keep one eye on the comments or you can just decide to play the song and then look afterwards. And that's what I was doing. I was just in the song. 4 minutes later, I'd look at the comments. I'm like, oh God, no one could even hear any of that.
part of it was just for you. So that was for you, Chris.
That's true. That was an ultra private and personal performance.
That's right. Well, today's episode, we are talking about band names, and I think if I had to pick one question that we've gotten more often than anything else this past year, it's something having to do with names. Would you say that that's probably a correct statement?
Yeah, and not only the names, but how the name affects what they're able to do or not do, particularly in like the streaming environment.
Yeah. And it's become something that I'm almost getting an email daily to the podcast that has something to do about a name, rebranding, all this stuff. So we thought it would be fun to compile a list and do some discussions around what to think about when you choose a band name. But first, I want to highlight that the DIY Musician Conference tickets are still on sale. You want to get in on this. The longer you wait to get your ticket, I should say, the longer or the more opportunity you might be passing up, because we've talked about a lot of the things that you'll learn at the conference. Lots of great information. You know, there'll be some of the best there helping you learn how to market your music, how to help you make it better, and also how to monetize it. We're actually breaking it up. I don't think I've announced this anywhere yet. We're breaking it up into three tracks this year, trying to do a make track, a monetized track, and a market track. So we're trying to group things together that help you with those different things, depending on where you're at with your music. But beyond that, all that stuff's great. And we have great professionals and other artists who are doing cool things there to help you out. We don't spend a lot of time talking about what you can do. And there's some new things this year that you're going to be able to do. We have things like mentoring, which we've had in the past. We're expanding that. But we're also going to have professionals that will be there to give you feedback on a song. So you can sign up for a session with one-on-one with a professional where they can listen to your song and they can give you feedback on the spot. This is one of the things we've been asked for. Frankly, I find it terrifying.
I know. Particularly if it's past the demo phase, because then I'm like, well, what are you going to do at this point?
But people crave this feedback, and I get it. It's great to have a professional give you some honest feedback and critique on your music. So that's something new. Sure Microphones is going to be back, and they're going to have their open mic room going all weekend long. So you'll be able to sign up for open mic slots and maybe even collaborate with some people that are at the conference there. We will have the Jam Room, a highlight of the conference where you can go and just jam out with a lot of different folks from the conference that we've had. One video we had that I saw, there was like 30 or 40 people in there singing Hey Jude all at once, and it was mind-blowing. And there was like, 10 guitars, keyboard, all this stuff going, and lots of people singing. It's a great time. If you're thinking about like jam as in like some one person in there just playing a guitar solo for 20 minutes, that's not what this is. It's a really collaborative, fun space. It's a lot of people end up meeting each other and having fun, like collaborating with on some projects and such. So there's that. We've got our evening showcases where if you bought in at the early bird ticket, some of you have already been selected to play. I'm not sure if all the notifications have gone out yet. I know they just selected them last week. People have been selected to play. We've got the open mic. There'll still be some slots available for that evening open mic showcase. That's going three nights in a row. So your chances of getting up on stage are even better, even if you weren't pre-selected. So
three nights and two stages.
So three nights, two stages. Yeah, it's going to be something. So you don't want to miss out. So there's lots you can do and beyond just sitting and listening and getting good insights. I think it's something that, if you're serious about your music career, it does your career a lot and your heart and soul a lot to set aside a weekend and go be about moving your music career forward. So that's going to be in Austin, August 16th through 18th, DIYMusicianCon.com. You can get your tickets. Chris and I will be there. And you can also participate in a live taping of the podcast, which is a lot of fun.
Well, and just to reiterate your whole point of saying this, I have interviewed and written probably three articles with artists, fellow attendees in years past who basically said like, this conference changed my life. And the key to it being such a good experience for me was that I signed up early and I said yes to every offer and opportunity that came across my inbox. So sign up, say yes to everything.
Yeah. And there's going to be some other opportunities that I didn't mention relating to some of the sessions that, that I don't have all the details on yet, so I'm not going to mention them just yet, but there will be some sessions where you can participate. So you can get feedback and all that in front of your peers and from industry professionals. It's going to be great. DIYMusicianCon.com. You should be there. Get your tickets now. The price will go up again. Right now that's $129 and it'll eventually go up again. So lock in your tickets and we'll see you in Austin. All right, Chris, let's start talking about band names and artist names.
And let's do it.
We have a giant list here, and it's not really in any particular order, I should say. There's just a lot of things to consider when picking out a band name. So maybe we'll open up with a few of the scenarios that I've had come up lately. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, especially the last 10 or so episodes, a lot of the listener feedback has featured a question about an artist name. So things like wanting to change your artist name because you decided it doesn't fit your music, or starting a band or having a band but wanting to go solo. That's been a common theme that we've had on the podcast. Or finding out that bands have similar names. So all these things, lots of things to consider when choosing an artist name and making sure you're happy with it and making sure that it's what you want to represent your music. So we're going to dive into that list. So let's start with the top one that we have on our list. You've got the same list that in front of you that I do, correct?
I do. So the first one is you got to think about your genre and setting correct expectations for your sound with your band name and not leading people astray. And I think I've said this example many times on this podcast, but our old friend Lisa Lapine had a band that she managed named Thrillbilly, which is a great band name if they had been a rockabilly band or you know, anything in that kind of realm, but they were not that. So she had to spend all this time being like, oh, so it's this band I manage called Thrillbilly. By the way, they're not rockabilly. They're not whatever. So suddenly she has to sort of double her work in order to get them the same offers had they had a more appropriate band name.
I think this one is something that's pretty easy to do a little bit of research. If you're uncertain, I think you just go to Spotify or iTunes or Amazon or even something like Pandora, and you can poke around in different genres, and it becomes, I think, pretty apparent quickly what the naming conventions tend to be by genre. But yeah, you definitely don't want to spend time explaining what you're not. That's the sign of a bad band name. And we should say a lot of this, some of these things that we're going to mention might be more specific to a band name, but a lot of them do apply to you as an artist. If you're using your own name, I know a lot of artists who use their name, they struggle with, do I use my first name and middle name? Do I use my middle name and my last name, or first and last, or all three? And, or do I add something to it? So we'll dive into some of those pieces as well. But, like if you called yourself, Chris, if you called yourself the Chris Robley Trio, I would not be thinking rock and roll.
You'd probably think jazz, right?
Jazz or something like that. And so that's one way where a person's name could also have some sort of genre implications.
Yeah, well, one thing we do in that branding boot camp that we have done several times and actually turned into a podcast episode is go up to a total stranger and tell them your band name or your artist name, and then have them instantaneously tell you what you sound like based on their own assumptions. And maybe maybe you're a folk artist, but you say what your band name is, and they're like, oh, you're probably like a death metal band or what, or with like an accordion. And you're like, oh God, no. And if you get enough of that confusion from enough people, you probably know it's time to, consider a name change.
Yep. Yep. All right. So that's a easy one to get us started with. And I, like I said, these aren't in no particular order. So it's not in like, they get more important as we go or organized in a specific way. The next one is you want to make sure that it's something that's not accidentally offensive. And that sounds weird, but I have come across the situation where a band has a name and some people are hearing it differently or say, or just thinking they're referencing something that might be seen as offensive by some. You know, you might be making that choice, and if you're making that choice, that's fine. But you don't want to have this name that you're releasing music under and have your whole identity around and find out you're offending a lot of people.
Yeah, if you're going to offend people, at least be intentional about it.
That's right. That's right. Kind of piggybacking off of that one, you want to make sure that your band name or your artist name is not culturally insensitive. This is different than accidentally just like saying, you know, putting some words together that you think sound cool and realize, oh, that means something offensive to somebody. But culturally insensitive, I think sometimes people are doing this by choice. I think it's a bad choice. And some of this changes over time. There was an artist named, they wrote the theme song to a show I like. Their name was The Friendly Indians. And that's probably not the best choice of name now. They did that when back in the 90s, I think, probably when people didn't think as much about that. But now that's probably something I'd stay away from.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I'm thinking of our friend Simon Tam's band, though that is, he has a band called The Slants, but everyone in the band is Asian. And so it could be perceived as having that culturally insensitive effect, but in a way it's a sort of reappropriation of they're sort of claiming a derogatory term, in which case it kind of goes back to them being a little bit more intentionally explosive or whatever with their name.
And they went all the way to the Supreme Court over it too,
right?
And
totally.
won because they tried to trademark it. And that was something that, you know, they intentionally were like, we're Asian American. We want to claim that. We don't think that's insensitive. And that was a case they knew what they were getting into. And And yeah, went all the way to the Supreme Court for it. So if you're getting into that, you just want to make sure you understand what you're getting into.
Next one on the list, it's illustrating its own point and also the previous ones, I think. Okay. So the next one, make sure you're not eliciting the idea of poop or something else unintended. So not to make him feel even worse many episodes ago, someone called in and was considering the name Brown Randy, as their artist name. And we both immediately thought like, I was thinking of Mr. Hankey from South Park.
That's what I was thinking of.
And then not to mention, I thought, well, if this guy is white, Brown is not his last name or what. Actually, it might've been Randy Brown.
It was Randy Brown, but he was like going by Brown.
Switching it. If he's a white guy, seems like it could bring in unintended cultural/racial, problem interpretation. I don't know. Like, it's sort of just like everything about it screamed like, don't go there. Just change your name to something else. But certainly the first thing you and I thought of was Mr. Hankey, the Christmas poo.
This could happen. You know, that's just something to think about. You know, you may go, you know what? Screw that. I'm going to own it. And that's fine. But it just remember that could potentially be a challenge. I should say all these things aren't like hard and fast rules. You can name your artist, go by, you know, your band or choose your artist name. You can make it anything you want. The last thing you want, however, is for your name to be a hindrance to people getting to your music. And so that's the point of all this, to think about as you're selecting a name and all that. So some of these are more just like are practical or you know, tactical type decisions. Others are just branding decisions. So, and you know, unless you're going after the junior high boy market, people thinking about poop when they hear your name probably isn't right.
Well, I don't know if this is a point we're going to make later. I forget if you wrote this in there, but like, I think another question you should ask yourself with anytime you're deciding on a name is like, assume you're going to have this name for 70 more years. Are you going to be okay living with that name and putting music out under that name in 20 years or in 30 years? Like, or is it a stupid junior high joke now that, you know, you can imagine that one day you will mature past where you're at now and that'll sound stupid. You must know right now in the moment.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
Well, and that's what happened to the Bare Naked Ladies. They did not intend that for that to be their band name. They got a gig and they needed some sort of name. And, you know, I remember in college, there would be bands that would name as a joke, playing a gig, name themselves Free Beer or something like that. That's what Bare Naked Ladies was. That was kind of a different take, kind of being goofy, like, oh, that'll get people out to the show. And then they took off really fast and they were kind of stuck with it.
Well, maybe that's an example of it working.
Yeah, you can get over that. But if they hadn't taken off really quickly, like they just gelled and it could have, you know, struggled. But music was so good that it just kind of went beyond the challenges of that name. All right, the next one I've got on the list is, you might want to think about if the term or phrase or whatever you're thinking for your band name or the words, do they have any double meanings that you haven't thought of or a different way it could be taken?
Oh, which maybe like if you have a band name that you're thinking of, maybe go online and type it in and like look at the Urban Dictionary or any of those kind of slang resources and just see if...
Yeah, because that's what I kind of by double meaning thing, like, yeah, if there a slang way that word or that phrase is used that could be taken the wrong way or maybe not what you intended. It's just good to double check that and make sure that you're not sort of having tunnel vision on this name and other people see it from a different way. This next one that I've got is something I've seen happen on a few occasions, and it's, you know, you need to consider, is there a different type of product with the same name or similar name? One, it could be impossible to find your band name on a Google search if there's a very well-known product with the same name. and it just makes it hard for people to find it. But also, too, you could run into trademark issues and be forced to change your name down the road, and you don't want to have that happen to you.
Right.
And I have seen that happen to a band where they got sued and had to change their name because they chose a name that there was a product out there with the same name. So you don't want to do that if you can avoid it at all costs.
Yeah, the next one is similar to that, like using, you said, a recognizable brand name, but also a person's name. Like, you know, I don't know, wasn't there a band for a while like Bastard Sons of Johnny Cash? Which I actually think is a pretty evocative, cool band name, but like it could get you into trouble, you know, if you were playing on someone else's brand and can you trademark a name like Bob Dylan? I forget, but
I don't think you can. You can't trademark a name, but you can. Well, that's a good question. I'm going to back up that statement because if I was wrong and there was a lawyer listening, they'd probably just crash their car.
right. But either way, it's, you know, for as much benefit as it could provide, it could also cause some headaches.
Well, and the situation that name and the one that I'm going to mention in just a second are all people that are dead. And so that might be a little different. When I wrote that, like, off of somebody's name, I was thinking, like, someone trying to capture some popularity of, like, a living celebrity. And so there are things where it's, like, if you're trying to, like, confuse people or just game the system with popular searches or something like that, I've seen it happen, and that's a good way to get yourself in trouble and also forced to change your name. And ultimately, I think it falls back into what you already said, that in 10 years, is that name going to be relevant? So that's something that a lot of those seem to be a little bit too based on popular culture that will fade very quickly and the reference will be lost. But you don't want to name yourself. I'm sure there has been some. I'm not thinking of any right now where they've like used a celebrity's name and whatever. You just don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, we do see a lot of, to hit the next point, we see a lot of bands that are like tribute bands, and they try to not just use their album namespace real estate for this, but to put like the example I thought of was just Chris Robley plays the Beatles or something like as the artist name. No, don't
yeah,
do that.
You cannot do that. The digital music services will not allow that. However, you know, like if you were doing a tribute band that's just playing live, not going to record it and release it, I think that could work. Like if it's you, Chris Robley, and you're like, Chris Robley plays the Beatles, and that was like a thing, a moniker that you went under when people knew, oh, this is a night where Chris is going to be playing his little tribute thing. That could work, but you can't distribute music that way.
Right.
I was going to say that the famous person, where the artist used a famous person's name in the title that I did a show with was the band was called the Wayne Gacy Trio. And when this is with Hello Morning, this was here in Portland. And when we got booked, it was a friend of ours that was just putting together a random bill. I had no idea
what you were in for.
That is this John Wayne Gacy? Is that
yeah,
what
that's it? Yeah.
I had no idea he was a serial killer, and I had no idea that he dressed up as a clown when he killed people. And so, I very quickly found out that this Wayne Gacy Trio was a guy who dressed up as a clown and sang songs about murdering people. And his band dressed
up. You were in for a real respectable jazz trio?
Yeah, I did. I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird that this like jazz trio's headlining this rock show. So, you know, one, it was creepy. Two, I don't like clowns. I'm a normal human being. I do not like clowns. And so when we go to do the show, we sound check, and then he comes in and he's dressed like a normal person and he does his sound check. I'm like, we're all just like, what is going to happen tonight? And so then we kind of go on and, you know, get dinner. And I come back, and this was at the Doug Fir Lounge here in Portland, which at the time, I think they've remodeled the green room, was just kind of this long a deep room, kind of narrow, but deep room. And so I walk back into the green room by myself. And at the back of the room, there's just this booth. And he was dressed up in his clown getup. Sitting at the booth.
Sitting at the end of the old green room.
Just kind of smoking and like didn't even acknowledge, look up. And it was just extremely creepy.
And just to further paint the room, if it's like I remember it, no windows.
You're
deep underground. Yes. And in the back of the room where I'm picturing him sitting, there is just stacked chairs and tables with like no rhyme or reason, just like people had thrown a bunch of furniture back there.
Yeah. And he was just sitting there and I wanted to go home. It was frightening. Anyway, that was my experience with an artist that had used a celebrity or some sort of iconic person's name as a part of their band. And the songs were terrifying as well. He needed therapy. All right. So where were we? Let's see.
I think we've addressed the famous ripping off tricks. The next one is, does your band name mean anything or is it just a name? This one kind of drives me nuts. A lot of people do it. So I guess I understand. But like the thing where you're like, oh, I just flipped to a couple things in the dictionary, or like, oh, we were just stoned one night and we just thought up some term and it seemed funny or whatever.
Or we thought it sounded cool. Or
I mean, I guess if it sounds cool, like that's great. But like if it's totally... Well, I guess this comes up so much because time passes and then the person feels ashamed of the name. And it's always being described to me like, we're wondering about changing our name. We just thought of this thing up and like it doesn't mean anything. So I guess if you're thinking of a band name now and it doesn't mean anything to you now, it will mean even less to you down the road.
Yeah. And to me, you know, if you find a band name that just sounds cool but doesn't mean anything, that can be fine, but I think it's just a missed opportunity. You know, for us with Small Town Poets, every time we say that and to somebody new, I get more often than not people going, oh, that's a really cool name. Not because they think it sounds cool, but I think it elicits some imagery and some idea of maybe what the music sounds like or what the story of the band might be. And it very much encapsulates a lot of the beginning story of how the band got started. Two of our guys that write all the lyrics, they met in a creative writing class in a small town in southern Georgia. And so it instantly ties to the beginnings and the roots of our band, as opposed to just someone saying, oh, what does your band name mean? Oh, it just sounded cool. You know, you can get over it. I was thinking of like bands that I like that have meaningless names, Muse, Radiohead, U2. None of these names, you know, there's not a story behind those names. They just sound cool. And they manage to get by.
They certainly accrue meaning and brand whatever, you know, vibe through how cool the music is. I guess it goes with it. But I mean, it's the same with me. Like when I was playing under Chris Robley in The Fear of Heights, people would be like, oh, it's a cool name. I'm like, well, I'm afraid of heights. So there you go. Like, it's actually something about me.
Like a normal human being, just like the healthy fear of clowns.
Clowns and heights.
There's keeping no you alive. Reason to like either of those.
we have evolutionary response mechanisms to clowns and heights. For a reason.
Nothing good happens with an encounter with someone dressed up like that. They want to give you a balloon? That's horrifying. Yeah. How would you do that? All right. Let's see. We said, yeah, does it tie into your story? Next up, going a different route, is it hard to say or decipher? This one, there was a band that I met around the time when I first moved to the Northwest. Their band name was Rough Hewn, like roughly hewn wood, which was a term I didn't really even know at the time. But every time they said the band name, nobody could understand what they were saying. Like, what did you say? Like, I remember the first time I asked them, I think I had them repeat it like 10 times. Finally, may have just had them write it because I'm like, I honestly have no idea what's coming out of your mouth right
They're
now.
All rolling together like Rough-hewn.
Yes. Yeah.
Rough-hewn.
I'm like, what is that? And I told them, you need to change your name. You need to change your name. And they didn't. And then broke up. But we did a couple shows with them because they're friends of mine. And like, nobody, I just watched person after person just be confused by the name. And that's just a killer. If people feel uncomfortable saying your name or feel stupid saying your name, they're not going to want to say it. And that's killing all your word of mouth.
Well, another test that you could just go into a moderately loud bar and tell someone your band name. And if they're like, what? And you tell them again, and they say, what? One more time. Change your friggin' name. Yeah. So many times that people are trying to tell me their band name. I'm like, can you spell that? Or they're like, oh, it's this. And you got to spell it this way. And you got to like flip the three into an E and like. That's a whole other thing we'll get to. But
wait, which is the next point we have? Is it hard to spell? And so it may be that people know what you're saying, but the way you're choosing to spell it makes it really hard to find you in a search result. This can happen a lot with if you're even for an artist name, if you're using your own name. I've seen people get cute with trying to make their name stand out by doing a weird spelling of their name that's something that's not normal. And by not normal, I mean like there's certain ways people spell, common names. And so maybe you've got a common name and you're like, I want to make mine stand out a little bit more. So I'm going to change it around how it's spelled. You could really hurt yourself in search results. I had this come up recently by an artist that, I met at a conference and they told me their name and I went to Spotify and I could not find it. And then I Googled it and by, you know, working much harder than any average fan would, I finally found it and listened to their music. It was one of those situations where I'm like, oh, go listen to your music. I was making good on the promise, but I was like, ah, man, that's a rough spelling. And that might've been the way their name was really spelled, but it's just something to be aware of. And there, you might consider making some adjustments there.
Yeah, and on that note, like I said, like using numbers instead of letters or letters instead of numbers or trying to fit like, you know, an ampersand or an at symbol instead of an A, like any of that creative stuff will probably cause you more headaches than it's worth. If you're trying to put periods in between every letter of your name or like you're insisting that it has to all be lowercase, first of all, the digital streaming platforms hate that stuff. So they will try their best to block your music from appearing in that with that artist name. But then also, yeah, like you're creating extra steps for the person who just wants to search and find you.
Yeah, using symbols and things like that in place of letters, and it just makes it really hard. And you're just limiting the ability for people to find you. Sure, if you're on a major label, if you're the biggest release that Universal Music is doing this year, you can get away doing with whatever you want because they'll make sure that branding is pushed through and there's awareness that people will get from all the marketing, but it's extra money that they have to spend to make sure that people understand, you know, what your branding really is. Like, I don't know if you searched for Kesha, if you...
Are you supposed to use the money symbol?
Do you have to do dollar signs?
I don't know.
There was actually, that reminds me of a scene in, oh shoot, what was the name of that singing TV show, the drama, high schoolers?
Glee?
Glee, yes. Where the principal introduces the Glee club. They're singing in the auditorium for all the students and he calls it Ke, dollar sign, ha.
the artist. That's funny.
Perfectly illustrating that's confusing.
Right.
And as big as Kesha is, she's still got problems with her name by making that choice.
And there's always going to be way more people that don't know you than do. Right. What do we have next? Too common a word. Yeah, so like the Police or the Cars are like legendary bands, but that's only because they came out before Google.
Yeah, if you have I've seen some artists, you know, a lot of artists are like, I want a one-word name. Because if you can find a good one-word name, which you're probably not going to at this point, but if you can, it makes it easy for, you know, t-shirts and things like that sometimes and can give you some options as far as logos and things. But it really is going to make it hard to Google And yeah, people like the police, even now, if you search the police, probably the first thing coming up isn't the band. It's probably your local police department and things like that. So something to consider, those in a world where Google exists, and not only Google, but also moving into a world of voice activation. If I say, Alexa, play the Cars, I might get the Cars themes. I might get the Cars. I might get Car sounds. I might get Cars the movie soundtrack. And there's lots of things that could come up.
Interesting. I didn't even think of that angle.
Where are we at?
Let's see. Oh, already is the artist name already being used? So this is a thing where, like, you'll think of a cool name and then you'll realize there was a band in the 60s and then there was a band in Iowa in the 1980s. And like, you're like, all right, we can use it because don't do that. Like, don't create any brand confusion or trademark issues. And I think it's more common in those scenarios where maybe the name's not being used anymore. So you think you can now grab it. But there's also plenty of cases where lots of bands are out there working in their own local region with a name and they don't realize that there's 20 other bands out there with the same name. So do your Google searching and avoid it.
This is something that's probably one of the more frustrating points in the modern world. You know, back when the indie market was emerging and it was still just a CD market, a band might have existed with a name, but then they broke up. Their music only existed on 1,000 copies of CDs that nobody had and nobody could find. So it was as if the band had never existed. And, you know, basically you could take that name even though you had no idea they existed in the first place. Now, a lot of times, even in that situation, that band that broke up probably still has their music distributed. And so it's a lot easier for a band name or an artist name to live on in perpetuity. So you do want to do some searching. The one exception to the rule is if you are an artist and you're going by your real name and there's other people with your real name and you have a common name, that's okay. But you are going to have some issues that you're always going to deal with. You know, like if you search certain names on Spotify, you'll see that are like a person's real name. You'll see a lot of different artists with that same name. But that's okay. It's not ideal. If there's a variation of your name that you can do that is more distinctive, that would be better. But you should decide on it now and not change every album. Because I've seen that happen where artists run into that. They're using their own personal name. They encounter the fact that there's 10 other people with the same name. And then they change it to their middle name. Then they go, whoops, I should have checked for that. And because there's another 10 people with that same name, now I'm going to change it again. And it just becomes this whole thing. So it's a lesson for the parents. When you're naming your children, give them distinct names that could be good stage names. That's what I did with my daughters.
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
Ella Jules and Beatrix Harper. So I guarantee you there's no other Beatrix Harper anywhere.
And just in case you have a Google search, what's it called? When Google notifies you automatically.
Yeah, Google alerts.
An alert, yeah.
And nobody listening to this podcast better start naming their daughters Beatrix Harper or Ella Jules. I've told them, you guys got to be performing. I gave you great stage names. Come on.
I did like 90% of the work for you.
Yeah, I know. That's half of it. And they're like, we don't want to be a musician. I'm like, come on. It's just kids. It's like, I've said this before. I'm like, I've got all these vintage amps and guitars in the house you could be playing with. I'm like, oh, Dad, that's just what you do.
Stop oppressing us.
That's right. Can't do anything to please these kids.
No. They got to carve their own way.
That's right. So the next one, we kind of touched on a little bit, but I'm going to hit on it a little bit more. Does it sound awkward? Now, this could be taken a couple ways. Does someone feel awkward saying it, or does it sound awkward when people say it? Like, they may know what the words are, but it just kind of has a hard turn of, I don't know, syllables or consonants. And I don't know. It's just sometimes I've heard a word and it's like that, the way those words are put together just sounds awkward. it doesn't feel cool or smooth or I don't know. It just feels put together, kind of forced.
Mm-hmm. I wish we could think of examples. Like, I know what you mean, but I'm having a hard time thinking of one right now.
The next one that I had on there was, do fans feel stupid saying it? And I mentioned that kind of with that one artist name, that band name. That. But this, the one thing I want to point out here, and I'm not going to say the artist name because they're still an active artist and, you know, I don't know them personally and they haven't written into the podcast to ask for advice about names like Randy Brown did. So, but this is an artist. They're part of the CD Baby world and they were on NPR. And every time we've referred to them in the office, we'll say their name. But the way their name is said is different than the way it looks like it should be said when you see it. And every time someone says the name, because they feel weird saying it, because it's like only feels like half a word came out of your mouth, that always is followed up with spelling it. And I even heard Bob Boylan do the same thing on NPR. And so that's one of those things where, in that artist's case, that was their real name. And so it's just, that's a particular challenge that has to be overcome. And fortunately, in this artist's case, the music is really good. And so they are overcoming that name. But if you find your fans doing that or people that you're just kind of like, hey, this is our band name, or even when you're talking about it, if that's what you're like having to say, it's, you're pronouncing it, but it's spelled this way. If you're following up like that, that's a probably not the best choice if you have a choice. And so if people feel awkward saying it, they're just not going to want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll find ways, reasons to not say your name, or they just won't talk about your music.
I mean, and I even feel that way about people's actual names. Like I have that awkward response. Like if I say like Gillian Welch or something, I'm like, wait, I have this second guessing. I'm like, wait, is it Gillian Welch? Is it Gillian Welch? Is it Gillian? Like you have all these permutations, or Sarah McLaughlin? Sarah McLaughlin? And that's no fault of theirs. That's just a name that, you know, yeah. I guess you could take a few ways. So that's not, it's not something I would expect them to change their name. But I even have that awkwardness around something that should be set in stone, like someone's name. Like everyone should kind of know what a famous person's pronunciation is.
Yeah. I still don't know what Sarah McLaughlin's name or McLaughlin, whatever it is. I don't. I think it's McLaughlin, but I don't know. But she's made do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, they're both fine.
Yeah, you can overcome these challenges. It's just if you want to avoid the ones that you can absolutely avoid and just know what you're getting yourself into. All right. We mentioned somewhat... I skipped one. If you're trying to be too cute by like removing vowels, I know like Silicon Valley, in order to try and have app names and URLs, they started removing vowels and everything. And that might work for an app. It hasn't worked for most of them. Most of them are no longer in existence. But you want your music career to last longer than the average app lasts. So don't look to that community for your naming conventions, because it's really hard and it creates extra problems, especially when pronunciations and thinking about that voice command, asking a device to play something. If all the vowels are missing, your fans probably don't know how to say it, and that's going to be a problem.
And like a frequent email, or not frequent, recent emailer, I forget, is it Space Moose or Space Muse?
Space Moose.
Space Moose. So even they came up with a, you know, they tried to be cute with the umlaut and stuff, but even that confused you. And I'm still confused because I just got it wrong.
Well, we don't use those in the English language, so I don't even know what those mean. I don't know what sound that's supposed to make.
I think it means metal.
It does.
Means lots of distortion.
Yes, probably so. They're probably a classical trio.
Right.
No, actually, we watched the video. That's good music. Those guys are good. And gal, there's a girl in the band. I lost my train of thought having to do with...
Well, we talked about the letters and numbers. I think, is it tough to remember?
Oh, well, before I move off the letters, your fans may know how to say it. when you removed all the vowels, but Alexa may not know how to say it or what it is. I just got back from a conference in Nashville and had lunch with the product team over at Amazon, and it was fascinating to hear about what they're working on and some cool tools that artists are going to be getting access to soon. Look out, Spotify. Some of it relates to voice and things you can do there. And that's going to be exciting. But yeah, it's an interesting thing that you may know what it means. Your fans may know what it means. But the system that's trying to decipher voice commands and match it up to metadata may not know that those two things go together.
That's very interesting. I can't wait for that rollout.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Tough to remember. You started to say that.
Oh, yeah, tough to remember. So I realized that in this age where, you know, you have to be more and more creative to come up with a band name that's never been used and also is cool, there's a tendency to make really long names like Anjul Know Us by the Trail of Dead or something. And like Godspeed You Black Emperor, all these sort of big phrases. So I get that. Part of me gets the necessity of it. I also feel like it does create a certain kind of vibe, like a anthemic or epic kind of vibe. So if it works, it works. But sometimes when you go that long, your name becomes forgettable because it's too much for people to grab onto. So beware of that as well.
I've also seen concert posters where the headliner had a really long name like that, and I thought it was two different bands because it had to drop down to the second line. Here's one to think about. Does your name cut you off from specific opportunities? And the easy example is if you have an explicit word in the title, that could immediately cut you off from certain opportunities. Based on that, whether or not the company or somebody that might be interested in using your music sees that and thinks that it's probably offensive, or like the title, they might think your name's offensive, but they might make some assumptions about your music that may or may not be true.
Can they put it on the marquee of their venue? Like,
yeah, exactly. Or, here's an example from a band here in Portland. I am going to drop an F-bomb because it's a part of their name. So I'm giving you the opportunity. If you've got children in the car and don't want to send me hate mail, you can hit the fast forward for 30 seconds on your iPod or your iPod, your podcast app right now. But here it goes. The name of the band is Starfucker. And everywhere that band name appeared, they'd put a star instead of the U so people could put it on their marquee or on concert posters or things like that. And it became very confusing. People just didn't know what their name was. And their music was just like this indie pop stuff. They actually got some really, really big placements, both by IBM and Target. So this was about 10, 12 years ago. And if you saw a Target ad back then, you probably heard their song. But it was really hard for people to talk about them because that explicit word, you know, if they're at work or, you know, didn't know if someone would take offense to that. People called them Star Effer, or some people were confused by the star, like, is it Star Focker? Or, you know, it was just really challenging. And so if you're going to do that, just know you might limit yourself from, you know, or end up having to compensate for that, which is the case what they did. Their music, great indie pop stuff. I'm not sure if they're still around. I haven't heard much from them. But
yeah, I don't know. I do remember that Target commercial, though.
We talked about this next one. Will it become dated? I hear people do this in songs a lot where if they make references, they're like, that song will not be a song people sing for the ages because you are making so many pop culture references that will not mean anything to anybody 5 years from now. But, you know, with your artist name and band name, if you're doing something that's a little too trendy, that might be something that you regret later on. Then that becomes one of those opportunities where you're like, I need to change my name.
Yeah, well, speaking of 10 or 12 years ago, there was that time where it was like there was Panda Bear and Grizzly Bear, and like suddenly there was like Polar Bear and Koala Bear, and like seriously, You're really naming yourself something bear right now.
Yep. Yep. Every generation has its naming convention.
Yeah.
We got a couple more. We can wrap it up. Like, does it indicate the number of people in the band? Like, not saying that it should, but is it sometimes that happens and it feels confusing because it kind of confuses of who the band is. You mentioned Ben Folds Five, but there's three people
in the band. And so that one I feel like works because it's funny and his music's a little like jokey in a way, but like, I also think like if you call yourself whatever the Kingston Trio or something, like you should stay as three people forever, but maybe your tastes are going to change and you want to add a couple extra players, or maybe two people quit and now you're solo, but suddenly your catalog of recordings is going to be, you know, split up into two different artist names if you have to lose the bit that, you know, the trio or the whatever quintet, any of that kind of stuff. So just be wary of any of those sorts of identifiers in your artist name.
Yeah. And you also, when we were talking about this, mentioned the idea of like, is there a random number that that people are like, what is that number for? Like I mentioned Maroon 5, like I have no idea what that five, is there five people in the band? Is that what it is? Or what is the five just cool? Or, you know,
right. Yeah. So I have a friend, Brad, who's in a alt rock band, like a sort of 90s alt rock band called 13 Black. And on the one hand, I feel like it's a good band name because as soon as I hear that, I'm just like, oh, well, that totally sounds like it's a 90s alt rock band, 13 Black. On the other hand, I'm like, I don't know what the 13 indicates. Probably nothing. You probably just thought it sounded cool. I don't know. So.
Yeah.
Maybe for them it works because it is setting the genre expectation.
Yeah, it could work.
I mean, it's got just an unlucky whatever.
Yeah. Again, these are all just things to consider. There's not necessarily, with some of them, there's right and wrong answers. Some of them, it's just, these could be points of confusion for fans, and just know what you're getting yourself into. Is there something, I think this is something, that may be a little bit of self-assessment. Is the name you're going under, is that something that you honestly can see as being successful? Like when you see it up on a marquee, does that seem like, yeah, that's somebody that sounds like a professional band? That's just something to think about, to conceptualize, to see how it feels when you think about it and beyond just yourself and what you're doing at the moment. But like, if this thing did take off for you in a big way, does that name seem like something that would be respected among all the other names out there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last thing on my list, as far as we've got a few other items, like more like things to think about as well. But is the URL even available?
Oh yeah, maybe start there. Step one.
Well, there's a lot of different URL combinations you can do, but it's important to look. You know, depending on what your name is and some of these other things we discussed, it may be darn near impossible to get a good URL. You can always do like band name official or, you know, things like that. That happens a lot, but, you know, that's something to check out. And a few other quick items, things to think about that maybe, you know, might not be as important, but does it lend itself to merch? Does it help the right people find your music? One thing I would say is your family is not the best judge of a good artist or band name. They're probably not going to be objective.
Right.
Because they are thinking, oh, this is a cute thing you're doing. A lot of times family are just like, oh, it's so cute. Oh, I love that name. They're not thinking about all these real career type things that you need to think about with a name. So, you know, you can float it past them, but don't let that be the only sort of sounding board you throw it off of.
Yeah, I like this next one. Does your band name set you up for bad press? And I don't know if this is exactly what you're getting at, but there's some things where like you could call yourself the Downers. And if someone doesn't like your music and they find you depressing, like you're handing them the insult right there. It's like the critic is like, this was a downer. I want to like completely whatever, something awful. And the,
you
the,
want a true downer, listen to their music.
Yeah, like, so the negative review is writing itself, or like the mute singers or something, and they'd just be like, yeah, I wish I had a mute button or something. You like, just think about whether your band name is handing them, doing their job for them if they don't like you.
Yeah. And I'll, like you mentioned, the way you spell it must be uniform. Don't try to go for all caps. You're always going to run into problems. All the services do not like that. In a CD world where all we had were CDs, you could have done whatever you wanted. But now that we have to make things into metadata for computers to understand what they're seeing, for people to be able to type stuff in, for people to be able to say stuff, there's got to be some uniformity to things. And don't try to get too fancy with that. You can do it on your merch all you want, but as far as how you list it when you distribute it, it needs to be uniform.
And speaking of uniformity and consistency, if your artist name is written on your album artwork, it has to be exactly the same from the sort of digital metadata version of your artist name and what appears on the artwork. You can't be like Chris Robley in terms of how Spotify is going to show up, but then on the album artwork, have it be like Chris Robley, King of Pop or something. Like, it's got to be the same.
Yep. And ultimately, or no, there's two more. You said don't use three different monikers like Eminem, Slim Shady, whatever he goes by, his real name. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I know this is sort of a convention in the hip hop world, so maybe there it's not as cut and dry, but like, pick one name. Do yourself like the branding favor of just putting all the energy and associations behind that one name.
Yeah. And the final thing I have probably is counterintuitive to this entire podcast, because after listening to this, probably half the people listening are wanting to change their name. But I put, stop changing your name.
Yes. That's what, so this really should be a podcast that you listen to before you ever settle on a band name.
That's why I'm titling it Before You Choose Your Artist or Band Name, listen to this.
And then, yeah, so once you've settled on it, it's settled and you will never, ever again change it for the rest of your life.
Ever.
That way, all your music that you create can all exist in the same little digital ecosystem. You don't have to manage 20 different artist names that you've had or different band projects you've had throughout your life. It's all in this one nice little neat bundled up package.
Till the end of time.
Till the end of time. Till the heat death of the universe.
See, I actually have thought about this because, you know, I did this one post-rock instrumental track way long ago, and I've got like a whole album's worth of ideas for more tracks. I'm better at collaborating with people. When I'm working by myself, I get to a point and I just hit a brick wall, and then I move on to the next song and I'll write, like, you know, come up with 20 cool ideas but not finish one of them. But when I get around to finishing that, I already have an artist name to do it under that's more of a band name that I was shocked that it's not taken. And I'm not going to say it here because someone will take it.
But well, you it need does... to put a single out under that name quickly just to establish
that's what I've been trying to do. And it even ties into me as a person and where I got the idea from is musical related as well. So I thought, wow, that would be really cool. Like, I just got to finish a track so I can get it up there under that name. I might just throw a dummy track, like, because all the bumper music for the podcast is stuff that I've done, so except for the theme song, which is you, Chris Robley. But I thought I'll just throw one of those tracks up there to secure the name and have it out there. But I'll let everybody know, and you can critique me on my name and tell me how much you hate it. But I've thought about it for a long time, and I think it's fine.
Yeah, you've gotten to live with this name. That's another bit of advice. The last thing we should say is, once you sort of decide on something, sit on it for like a month or 2 months and see, you know, like, do you still love it? Good. Okay. Then go with it.
Yep. All right. Well, if you have any suggestions or you have a band name you want to run by us, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. Yeah, I'd love to hear what people have tried, if they've had some naming issues, if you've had some funny incidents happen because of your name. That's something that we want to hear about as well. You know, there's always those annoying things with names. I don't even think we mentioned this, but Small Town Poets, we spell small town as one word. So our abbreviation is SP. But so many people write it Small Town Poets being three words, which is fine. It's, you know,
and then you get to be Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah, but people go, oh, STP, just like Stone Temple Pilots. I'm like, no, it's actually SP. That's just one of those annoyances. You're always going to have some annoyances, but the important thing is that people always know how to say it. They know what it means and all that kind of stuff. So,
not to belabor this point too much. I had one other comment because I feel like one of the most common band name related questions we get is, should I create a different band name or moniker for every, you know, slightly different genre I explore? And I feel like my default answer is always no. Like, if you're the Common Sensibility, the music's probably not that different from release to release. Even if one is like a polka album and the next one's hard rock, like, you know, if you're the through line and the singer on both and you wrote stuff, like, maybe be like David Bowie and keep it all under one thing, even as you explore different sounds.
Yeah. I mean, look at Queen.
Right.
We talked about, there's some very diverse musical genres. In fact, for years, I never knew that some of their songs were them because they're very diverse, but they kept it all together. All right, let's dive into some emails. We've got a call, and we've got a couple calls, but one of them's kind of long. I don't know if we'll have time for it, but if I don't use it, we'll save it. And we may have an email about a name situation. All right, I'm going to lead it off. Hi, thanks for the podcast. I'm enjoying listening. On live streaming, I've tried quite a few things. Here are a couple of things. Check out streetjelly.com. You can earn tips from this. There are plenty of people making loads on tips as well as building a loyal following here. Also, check out my song list. People can make requests and also send tips. Create a paypal.me link and make sure you put it in somewhere on your stream so that people can tip you if they feel so inclined. And these are all numbered. So number four, I've used Roland Go Mixer plugged straight into my phone. You can plug quite a few sound sources into this and also monitor with headphones. Number five, if you want to play band in a box backing tracks on live stream, an easy way to do this is to use a mixer. Plug your guitar and mic and the audio device with your backing tracks into the mixer and then plug the mixer straight into your computer. Regards, Joanne Cooper. And she says, P.S. I have loads of resources on band in a box on my website. If you're interested, it's an amazing product. All of my music has been produced with zero cost in my tiny home studio using band in a box. Her web address is joannecooper.co.za. So, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say thanks for all those suggestions. I'll have to go check them out.
Yeah, and I checked out that Roland Go Mixer. It's actually very cool. I didn't know it existed, but it is something that is perfect for live streaming. I noticed there's a Go Mixer Pro. I saw somebody somewhere mentioned the Go Mixer, and like, I wish they had a version that could plug in a mic cable, but the Go Mixer Pro allows you to plug in an XLR cable as well. So you can plug in a guitar, XLR cable, like a keyboard or whatever. And it's really portable. It's not much bigger than an average size guitar stomp box. Looked really cool. I saw it. I'm like, how did I not know about this? I almost bought one just because it looked cool. I'm like, I don't know if I'd use this, but this looks really cool. But a great way to easily get audio, like even onto your phone, like you can do if you're doing Instagram Live using your phone, this would be a great way to plug in a microphone, a guitar. And I like how she's using backing tracks through it and making it. So it might be something where you can make some stems of your music that fit that and play and not have to just do like the acoustic thing.
Sweet.
And the tipping thing, Chris, maybe you should try just throwing out a PayPal.me. You know, your mom probably would have thrown something
she would,
in there.
She would, probably. Well, that's another good question to throw out to listeners is I've been reluctant to post with links because, I mean, I know I could put it in the comments section. I always just assume if there's a link, Facebook is going to kill the reach. And for me right now, I'd rather people just see it than me try to monetize it.
Yeah. Well, even just trying it in the comments section, like when you see like, that things are rolling. I don't know. It's something to consider. You know, you can get it in the mix at some point.
True. I mean, I have no shame about like plugging my like free CD offer or like a t-shirt thing. So it's not really that different.
Yeah.
I'll try it.
All right. You've got an email. Why don't you read that?
All right. Hey guys, I'm an indie folk artist in Sweden under the name Marty West. My question is about how to divide streaming royalties in the early stages. I have friends I work closely with who help me with my music, whether it's engineering a recording session, playing drums, or singing backing vocals. They have quite an important influence. Now that I'm starting to get more streams and sync licensing placements, I want to reward them fairly for their contribution, which is sometimes a bit intangible, seeing as it varies song to song, and they have no songwriting input. Any suggestion on how to do this? I'm considering giving them a piece of the master side, but I don't want to put off potential placements by having a longer list of people to get clearances from. I'd love some advice. Love the podcast and hugely indebted to you guys for this resource. Thanks again, Marty. That's a very good question.
I definitely wouldn't give them a piece of the master recording outright as far as ownership. So you have to go track down unnecessary rights holders.
Yeah, I think that's wise that he had that sense of caution. But it doesn't mean you can't just pay your friends every once in a while based on your own, whatever, goodwill.
Yeah, the band that I had when I first came to Portland, it was like me and one other guy, but we had a bass player and a drummer playing for us. And usually I would just say, hey, we're getting this paid this much for the gig. I can pay you this. And they didn't play on the record, so I didn't feel like I needed to pay them for, you know, like any sync placements, which that album did get. But if we sold more at the merch table, I would cut them in on that as well. You know, I would just kind of set some sort of like, oh, if they played on this song in the studio and it does well, I might reward them with this, or I don't know, maybe per placement, depending on what it is, you just cut them a percentage for a time being. That's case by case basis, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too. And also like you could have a, I don't know if you just said this, but basically have a percentage in mind per song. Maybe the backing vocalist really made one particular track. So you're like, okay, on this, I'm going to give them 5% of whatever I make. Again, you don't need to sort of in writing, cut them in on that. You could just cut them in on the rewards after you've been paid.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's go to a call.
Hey guys, enjoy the podcast and got a question about having two different brands. My name is Nate Hance, by the way, and most of what I've done in the past is just all piano stuff, so solo piano recordings, different stuff on YouTube with different piano medleys and such, so kind of more serious and more piano focused. But then I also do kind of funny songs, funny videos, like my song I Don't Like Pineapple on Pizza and I Don't Like Slow Left Lane Drivers, so stuff like that, which is kind of fun. But I've been putting it on the same page, on the same YouTube channel, and on the same Facebook page. And I'm realizing now that it's probably kind of confusing having those two different brands, the one more serious music and the one kind of funny music on the same brand. So I've been thinking about creating another channel for the funny stuff, but having trouble finding a way to transfer it all over. Like, for instance, on YouTube and Facebook, I have the videos all under my one channel, but I want to make the funny videos, transfer them to a different channel. I'm not sure if there's a way of doing that. And just wondering if you have any other advice on having two different brands and having how you can communicate that with your fans to know where to access the two different brands. So hope that makes sense, and I'll be listening for your answer. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. I think he said his name was Nate. It was a little tough to hear at the beginning. First of all, a song about pineapple not belonging on pizza, that's not comedy. That's just truth that the world needs to hear.
No clowns, no pineapple on pizza.
It does not belong on pizza. And thank you, Nate, for being
for sharing
able to speak,
that truth
sharing the truth with the world. This one was interesting to me because if it's on YouTube, if he's creating two different YouTube channels, my tendency would be to say to create a separate YouTube channel for the comedy stuff and or humorous stuff and not the other stuff, the piano music, the solo piano stuff, letting it be its own channel. Just in that instance, because I feel like the way YouTube wants people to use the platform, they want the content to be very consistent and people come to a channel for one very specific thing or one very predictable thing, if that makes sense. So
yeah, I would think that
situation I'd split them.
I agree. I think in this case it goes against the advice I was giving earlier, because in the previous example I was trying to think of, it was sort of a common voice or tone but expressed through multiple genres. This seems like it's the opposite. It's like two totally different characters. One very serious and then the other one. Like that seems like you should brand them differently.
Yeah. And it could be something as simple of like your name and then in parentheses, like comedy or whatever. I don't know. YouTube's a little bit more forgiving with naming conventions. It's really when it comes down to distribution where it gets like you're locked in a little bit more. But those two things feel like different things. You could still put them under your name, but there might be some sort of distinction. Like, you know, what you've done, Chris, with your band stuff, Chris Robley and the Fear of Heights, compared to just Chris Robley. So it might be that there's a name like that where all the comedy stuff is under, but the regular piano stuff is under just, you know, your regular name.
Yeah.
I could also see them living together on Spotify because I feel in that situation, it's less important to separate them. But on YouTube, I would definitely separate them just because the way YouTube works, it's going to recognize that that content's different and the audience is different.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
All right.
I'll be curious to see how his website kind of segments both identities.
And we've got one more email just to drive home the point that, like I said, naming stuff has been one of the top things we've been asked about. Hey, Kevin and Chris, I'm listening to episode number 175 on branding and have a question. I released my first two albums via CD Baby under my name, John Connor. Problem is there are other artists with my name and it's causing confusion. I'm rebranding my current album before it's released, changing my artist name to John 3, my nickname, for originality. I eventually want to re-release my first two albums under the John 3 artist brand. Any recommended time for how far apart I should re-release my first two albums? Thanks, sincerely, John 3.
I believe I'm Twitter friends with John, unless it's one of those many other John Connors he's talking about competing with. But
I bet you're Twitter friends with him. I'm on his website right now.
So not to make you second guess your whole life, John, but I do wonder, I don't know if you're Christian, but I had perhaps an unintended association with like John 3 of the Bible, like John 3:16 or any of that, but maybe I'm stretching.
I thought that's the first thing I thought of.
Okay. So then I guess that's
someone searches John 3 in Google, they're going to get the Bible.
Right.
And his website says John 3 Music, which could work. But I still feel like if you search John 3 Music, you're probably going to get stuff based on John 3:16.
Right.
So
yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a problem with John Connor, even if other people have the same name. I think there's ways you can, you know, when you distribute the music, you're going to have to do the artists, you know, make sure you give us the artist ID when you distribute, and then it'll get to the right Spotify and Apple Music profiles. But I'm sure there's a lot of John Connors, though. So I can see his thing. And if John 3 is his nickname, I just don't know how that ties into his story. So that could be a piece that I'm just missing that once I knew would make sense.
Right.
But we didn't answer his real question.
Oh, yeah. Once he's found a name, what the heck's he going to do with his old releases? Is that the question?
Yeah, what the timing would be is like old releases. I would probably just put them out there. I would get a single under the new name to make sure that you capture the artist for Spotify profile and any other profiles you need to grab. And then I'd probably release the new album just to make sure that people knew that it was the new album. And then, you know, maybe a little bit down the road, just not a long time down, but maybe just give that new release some space and then just release both the back catalog pieces. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah. And as long as you put their original release date in the metadata when you sign them up, they will appear, you know, chronologically as they should in Spotify. It's not like your old stuff will appear as like the priority release as long as you put its original release date. Right? Yes. I'm right about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I hope that helps, John. It's tough. Names are tough. It's really tough. You know, when we think about this stuff, I don't assume the internet's going away. It's only going to get tougher. What are people going to do?
Well, then what I wanted to know is, can someone out there that's listening break all of the rules? Can you come up with a band name that breaks every bit of advice we just gave?
Probably so.
That could be an awesome band name.
That could be. That's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to find something that breaks all the rules, but then put it all together.
Yeah.
All right. We have time for this caller. They called in and they hit the limit on the recorder, which is 3 minutes, I discovered. And then they called back to finish it. And they gave some tips on the second call. I'm just going to play the second piece. The first part of the call, he called in wanting to know how many pre-saves it takes to really make a difference for the Spotify algorithm. And I could say, it all depends. I think it depends on genre. It depends on the release day, what other things came out. It's like a recipe that's always evaluating relational data. It's not like a hard and fast rule, hit this number of pre-saves and all these chain of events happen. It's like relational data that relates to what else is going on in Spotify. So it's hard to know. But then he had this bit of advice and called back to share. So this is the second part of his call.
Hey guys, sorry about that. Brian again from Rally Suite. I was rambling on. I got cut off. All right, so I'll make this extremely quick. This second part of the call. So I was going to be, I'm going to share a best practice that I've been using to gather up some pre-saves. You know, I started, you know, campaigning hard and reaching out to individual fans, and you know, I had some good results. Although I kind of started to feel like I was exhausting the fans and followers that were actually engaging with us on social media. You know, you have, you know, thousands of people on social media, but there's only a small fraction that are actually engaging with you. So I started to feel those dwindle away. So I began following the pre-save and Spotify pre-save hashtags on Instagram. And that way, whenever another band out there would post something regarding their pre-save campaign, I would immediately hit them up and say, hey guys, we're doing a pre-save campaign. You're doing a pre-save campaign. Let's pre-save each other's new releases. And that's been really keeping our campaign healthy, believe it or not. I've never been reached out by another band or artist saying, hey, pre-save mine if I pre-save yours. No one has ever reached out to me regarding that. So I'm not saying I'm a pioneer of a new practice or anything, but when this crossed my mind and I thought to myself, wait, they have something in it for them, and then there's something in it for me. I just was shocked that no one's ever reached out to me regarding this, no other bands or artists. But it's been really successful. All right, well, anyway, guys, thanks a lot, and hopefully we'll be able to crack this whole Spotify pre-save campaign puzzle. Thanks, bye.
All right, Brian, thanks for the call. I don't want to burst his bubble, But I wouldn't do that, what he's doing.
I'm glad you're saying that.
Because you don't want people who aren't going to engage with the music pre-saving your music.
And so then that never band,
to it. Yeah, those bands probably aren't going to listen to it. So it actually dilutes the algorithm in the sense that it would be better to have 100 diehard fans who pre-save it in day one, the second they open Spotify or listening to your music, than to have 1,000 or 2,000 people pre-saving it and then only those 100 people go listen to it. That really tells Spotify that people just aren't that interested in it. So that's why I wouldn't say to do that. To me, that sounds, that's very similar to how a lot of people build up playlists where they get artists to follow their playlist in order to feature them. So it looks like this playlist has 10,000 followers, but then you pay them money to get featured on it and you realize you got zero plays. That's because it's 10,000 people that wanted to be featured on a playlist that aren't ever going to listen to it. It's not real listeners. So to me, everything should be focused around real listeners. And if it's bands that are in similar genres in the similar scene, that could work. You know, they might check it out. But if it's just a bunch of random people and just trying to get too focused on that metric as of a pre-save metric, then I don't think it really does anything for you. It might actually hurt.
Yeah, completely agree. I feel like this goes back to that thing of beware all kinds of vanity metrics and focus instead on quality engagement. And like, you know, maybe those, he worried that he was burning out his, you know, his dedicated fans. Well, maybe stop the campaign at that point and just assume everyone who's most inclined to pre-save has now pre-saved. And when the song comes out, they'll be first to hear it. And like, that's your audience. And if it's only 20 people, well, great. If 15 of them listen to it and get all the way through the song, that's proving to Spotify that there's at least a high percentage of engagement to the overall metric that they're, you know what I mean? So yeah, I'd worry less about like going big and wide with the campaign as opposed to like galvanizing the energy of the people who are going to prove your song is worth something.
Yeah. So I hope that doesn't make you sad, Brian, but I just don't think you should have to worry about the metric as much. And I don't think those anytime there's an algorithm, it's not one thing. It's a combination of things. And so it should be something that ultimately it's the system's trying to figure out music that people are engaging with, whether it's a small group of people or a large group of people. But it's trying to look at things like the people that like this type of music are digging these things. And so we'll feature those kind of things to them. So you want to make sure the data is good. The worst thing you can do is have bad data associated with your music, because then it's just a bigger challenge. You want good data, good interaction, good engagement, and do things that encourage those activities. So thanks for the call, Brian. I do appreciate you passing that along and throwing that out there. And if you would like to call our listener line, you can do so at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. We've got more emails that we're not going to share today, but there were some good ones. Somebody emailed yesterday that I think is going to be a whole new show topic that we have never done before, and I think it's going to be a fun one. Hopefully we'll get to that soon, but send us your ideas, your comments, your questions, your tips. And yeah, Joanna, thanks for the tips. Hearing from the ladies. Again, I would encourage the ladies. I know you're out there. Feel free to ask questions and give us your tips and tricks, because you have a voice. We want you to use it and be a part of the conversation and well represented here. So I invite you to do that. That's going to do it. Do you have any final words, Chris?
Onomatopoeia.
Perfect. I was going to say it, but I'm glad you did. I would just say DIYMusicianCon.com, go get your tickets. You know you want to be there. Your music career is worth a weekend of inspiration and opportunity. And you will be a different person after that. You will feel inspired, but also feel like you've done something for yourself in a positive way, and you need to do those things. So I hope to see you there in Austin, August 16th through 18th. And with that, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll catch you later.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.